everybody, and welcome to Story Nerds. I'm Jessica Kate, and I'm here with a special guest host, Misu Andrews. Welcome, Misu.
Oh, thank you for having me, Jessica. What a joy.
Oh, we are so excited to have you back. I think we had an interview with you last year, didn't we, for when your last book came out?
Yes, I just love talking to you. Thank you so much. This is so much fun.
It's so fun to have people and we can like track along with how their books are going and stuff. And thank you for being my special guest co-host this week because as we all know at the moment, coronavirus is pretty crazy. And Hannah, my usual co-host, she is a newspaper editor when she's not podcasting. And she is very busy at the moment bringing fantastic news coverage to her local community with everything that's going on. So waving to Hannah and hoping she stays safe and healthy and rested in this crazy time. But we're going to have some fun in the meantime, and everybody who's cooped up on quarantine is going to get some great book and movie recommendations because we are talking about ancient romance stories today, which is very exciting. Yeah. So this is all tying in with Misu's books. Misu, do you want to give us a 30-second intro to what you write and what you've got coming out and how that ties into our topic today?
Okay, well, I love biblical fiction. I hate that term, biblical fiction. I like biblical novel better because the Bible is truth as far as I'm concerned. So I write stories about Bible stories and do lots of fun research. And the one that I've just written is about King Manasseh. He was an evil, evil guy. And we think his grandfather was the prophet Isaiah. So that's the one that has just released in February, and it's an interesting book.
What's so interesting? Maybe we'll delve into that later because I know we'll be emailing about some of the interesting things. We'll do our nerd off first, and then we'll dig into why these books are so interesting. Okay. So, ancient romances. Do you want to tell me one of your favorites?
Oh, you know, when we talked about this, I had to really kind of rack my brain because I have to confess, I was not a big reader in high school, but movies have always been my thing. I love movies.
Awesome.
But I did want to say one romance, ancient romance, that just got me started reading biblical fiction was Francine Rivers' Mark of the Lion series. And that first one, A Voice in the Wind, oh my goodness. That did me in right there.
Oh, that one was on my list as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you've ever thought about delving into biblical fiction, that is the book you've got to start with. It is so good. So good.
Well, it is such an epic series. So if anyone's not familiar with the Mark of the Lion series, it's a trilogy that Francine Rivers wrote probably close to 20 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And it is an epic tale of a young woman, a young Jewish woman in about AD 70. So this is when the Romans have destroyed Jerusalem. It's been about 40 years since Jesus' death, and she is taken into Rome as a slave, and there's a massive story about her and the son of the Roman family that she serves and how her faith is challenged again and again and again and again.
Yeah, over and over.
And then there's a gladiator as well, a German gladiator who fought the Romans and was captured and has to fight his way through the gladiator system to try and get home. And, I mean, doesn't it just have epic Netflix series written all over it? Why have they not optioned this yet?
Why have they not optioned that? Oh, it's so good. Oh,
no, it's too big for a movie. Like, they need a whole
series. Yeah.
Yeah, it needs to be like a 10-part series. Get on it, Netflix. Yeah. Come on.
Netflix original. Let's just have the whole series. Yeah. Oh, it's so good. Oh,
Yeah, the epic scale of it.
What's one of yours? Let's hear yours next.
Well, that was one of mine, so I'm going to jump down to another one on the list.
Okay.
I'm going to go to a movie. this is one of my favorite movies. Look, this one isn't I picked this one because it is set in ancient times. However, it has really no links to the truth. Like, there's very little grip on reality, unlike Misu's stories or even Mark of the Lion, which are, you know, quite realistic, could have actually happened. The Prince of Persia movie. I I really
Yeah.
And one of the fun things, I've always loved that movie, and some of the bad guys in it are this, they're like a monk group of assassins called the Hersassins. And Misu and I were just chatting about, Misu has just returned from a trip to Israel, and I was in the Middle East. I did Israel, Egypt, and Jordan back in November, thankfully before the pandemic started. And I discovered on that trip over there that those assassins were real. That was an actual, yeah. It's probably the only part of the Prince of Persia movie that has any link to reality. But yeah, that was a very cool moment, because as I was traveling through that area, and it's always been one of my favorite movies, that was cool to learn. But anyway, if you haven't seen it, the Prince of Persia movie was inspired by the video game, and it stars Jake Gyllenhaal. And it just has so many of those romance tropes that I really love. It's like enemies to lovers, and so he is a Persian prince, kind of Aladdin-ish. He was a street orphan, and he was adopted by the king. So he has two brothers that are actually of royal blood, who, his oldest brother is actually in line for the crown. So he's not intending to rule or anything, but he leads this group of street fighters for the Persian army, and they attack a city, and it turns out that they have attacked it on false grounds, and the princess of that city really hated him for taking a city, but then he is framed for his father's murder, and he and the princess have to go on the run together to try and figure out who actually murdered the king and how they can clear Jake Gyllenhaal's name and how they can right the wrongs that have been done to this city that Persia has conquered. And it's very much in the vein of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. It's the same producers, I think, and it's very much that sense of humor, that kind of swashbuckling action, and it's a really fun movie.
Oh my, I don't think I've ever seen that.
It's really good. It came out in 2006, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, is it on Netflix or Prime Video or something?
Probably. I'm not sure. Okay. The Australian versions of those streamers always have different things on them to what the American versions do. So it's hard for me to check. But I have it on DVD because I love it.
Okay. Well, see, now I have to look that up. So
it's really fun.
Okay. So along those same lines, I love this. And it's even subtitled, but I still love it. And my family won't watch it with me because it's subtitled. It's called Jada Akbar. Have you seen it?
Oh, I have not heard of this. Tell me about it.
Okay. It's a little bit off, off the beaten path. But I go to this writer's conference. It's not really a conference. It's a retreat with about six or seven other girls, women, sorry, on the Outer Banks in North Carolina. And every fall we rent a house and we write for 7 days till our eyeballs fall out. I mean, we
that
just
sounds
write
like my dream week.
It really is. I look forward to it all year long. And so we write and write and write. And then at 7 o'clock, or usually 6 o'clock, we eat supper together, and then we stop writing and we watch these drippy romantic movie. I found one other friend that knew what Jada Akbar was, and she loves it like I do because it is so utterly romantic, but it's kind of got that silly sense of humor in it too, where they know they're being silly. It's about this it's interesting because it's about Hindu and Muslim trying to decide which religion is going to win in this country.
India, is it? Or one of the countries surrounding?
I think it's India, and it's ancient times, and and the prince who becomes king, it's, he's just this good-looking guy, and the little princess who becomes his queen, she is just really sassy and really snarky with him at first, and it's that they can't get together, and then they finally do, and then they don't, and then something comes between them, and it's that wonderful play between the two that they just can't get together because of all these things that pull them apart. Everything that makes a great romance, So it's great. It's wonderful. I love it.
That's awesome. So the subtitles, which country made it? Is it like a Bollywood movie or?
It is. I think it's Bollywood. Yeah. I think it is a Bollywood movie, which is ridiculous because I think it's the only Bollywood movie I've ever even seen. But great. Yeah.
That's awesome. Oh, that's fantastic. Well, my next one is a book series. It is Randy Ingemanson's City of God series, which combines a few different elements that I like. It's so unusual because it starts off, it's a time travel one, but the time travel is only in the very first section of the book, and then it's really just sort of an ancient story. So there's some modern archaeologists who accidentally get sent back in time to, now what year is it? It's about AD 60, I believe. So it's about 10 years before Jerusalem falls to Rome. And there is an assassin who has gone ahead of them, and they were chasing him, and that's what they're trying to do. And he's trying to assassinate the Apostle Paul to stop the spread of Christianity in history. So it's really, it's sort of a historic action story as these modern people try to navigate this wildly different ancient world, which has such different culture and expectations and stuff. And the depth of research that Randy has obviously done is phenomenal. Wow. And yet it doesn't get bogged down into any of that detail. So it's, yeah, this story of them trying to navigate this culture and work out how to stop the assassin and what they can do. And then you've also got to deal with the fact that Rome is currently ruling Jerusalem, which makes it a very dangerous place to be. And in 10 years, these guys also have no way to get back to modern time. They will never return to their home. It's not an option. And so they have to face the fact they now have to live their lives in this ancient culture. And one of the archaeologists is a woman, so a man and a woman are sent back, and the romance is between them. And so it's she obviously has the worst time of it because the roles are so drastically different, and they also have to deal with the fact that Rome is coming. They know that Rome is coming in 10 years, and they have bits of knowledge as archaeologists. They have bits of knowledge of what's going to happen, but not all of it. And so sometimes they can use that knowledge to their advantage, and sometimes it backfires. And yeah, it's a story that is really gripping. They're wrestling with their faith the whole time. Randy has a lot of research into their beliefs and how different it was in those times, and them wrestling with all of that as well. The men and women don't believe the same thing, so they're kind of arguing about that a lot during it. And yeah, it's just, it's a really interesting series, and the end of it is unputdownable, and it's really gripping. It changed the way I look at forgiveness.
Oh wow, that's awesome.
As the Romans come and friends are sacrificing or not sacrificing for different friends, it was a really gripping end to the series. So Randy Ingemanson's City of God series, have a look at that.
I have not read that yet. And Randy, I have not read that. And he's a good friend. I should be reading that. That's interesting.
Yeah. I really enjoy his particular mix of super intelligent writing, and yet anyone could understand it. You know, it's somehow it's smart, and yet there's no one who wouldn't understand what he's saying. Yeah. And the mix of action and romance and fun that he sort of manages to put together is something I really enjoy. And he writes in a few different genres, and I enjoy the voice across all of them. So,
that's really cool. Kind of describes him. He is this ultra intelligent guy. But when he teaches, he teaches at a level that people can understand. He's a neat guy.
I've never been in any of his teaching in person, but I did meet him at a conference in 2015, and he was just a delight. I was sitting in the restaurant myself waiting for a meeting for an hour, and he just saw me sitting there and included me in his conversation with him and Nadine Brandis, and they were so friendly and lovely. And he's a really smart guy, but he also has like a really high emotional intelligence, and that mixture. I mean, you know, our writing conference, AFW, is what, 98% women? He's one of the few brave men who attends. So he's this scientist man in a room full of hundreds of romance writing women, and he's fantastic.
He's learned how to handle us, I think. So
great.
Well, I think my third choice would be, I'm going to go with the one that the very first ever Christian novel that I read, which is going to be one that everybody probably knows, Redeeming Love. And and honestly, yes. I did not read that until I was in my 30s. And I just was not into novels. And I read all nonfiction and Bible studies and all of that. And finally, somebody convinced me to read this book. And, you know, I heard everybody raving about it. And I said, okay, you know, fine, I'll try it. And oh my goodness, I was hooked. The fact that, again, Francine Rivers could take a Bible story of Gomer and Hosea. Gomer was a prostitute and Hosea was a prophet. And God told him to marry this prostitute because God wanted the prophet Hosea to understand on a gut and heart level how it felt to be betrayed, how God felt to be betrayed by Israel's idolatry. And and so Hosea obeyed and he married Gomer the prostitute. Well, so Francine took that biblical story and she put it into a basically a prairie romance. And so you've got this
like a California gold rush setting, wasn't it?
So you've got Michael Hosea, this strong, strapping gold rush fella.
He's
you
like
know?
The Captain America of the California gold rush.
Exactly. Like every woman swoons when we say the name, right?
Yeah. And, yeah, you do. You see Michael Hosea and women just fall to the ground.
Exactly. Yes. And then you've got Angel, the prostitute that he knows that he's supposed to love and take care of, that God, you know, gives him this mission to love and take care of this prostitute. And she is just relentless in just being ornery and not accepting his love. And you just want to shake her, right? And how in the world can she not accept this absolutely gorgeous, wonderful farmer gold rush fella? And it just that biblical story to life, but it also just sets your heart on fire with this romance thing. And it also, if you let it, it brings the truth of God's love to a whole different level.
It really does.
It opens up a whole can of worms when you're talking about, you know, how in the world can God love like that? You know, I mean, I know the whole God loves me thing, but really like that.
To read about Angel, you know, leaving Michael and betraying him repeatedly and him still deciding to put her first, that puts it in a whole new light.
it was revolutionary for my spiritual life, but also for the meaning of love in romance writing. It changed how I wrote what true love looked like in romance. It's different because of that.
That's a great kind of point. Love. Yeah. You know, I get annoyed with sometimes you watch a cheesy movie and in it they have to describe what love is or something like that. And they say something like, oh, she makes me a better man, or, you know, the world is brighter when she's around, da 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 da. That is not how it is in Redeeming Love, you know. Michael Hosea suffers for Angel's sake, but he chooses to put her first anyway, and it's that kind of unconditional, absolutely sacrificial love that, I mean, well, rocketed that book to number one when it came out in, I think, about 2002, and it has remained in the top 10, I believe, of Christian fiction books sold ever since, 20 years later, people, and that book is still, if not number one, in the top 10 and has been consistently. Yeah. It was a true hit.
Has been optioned for a movie, by the way.
It has. Oh, I can't believe they haven't made it yet. They need to. That would be an incredible movie. Yeah. Like, and not just Netflix original, but like blockbuster cinema movie. It would be great. Like Cold Mountain, it would be like that.
I can't believe, yes, I agree. Totally agree.
Who would we get to play Michael, Hosea, and Angel?
See, I don't know the young. I don't know the younger actors anymore. I'm old. I'm 56 now, so I don't know the really good-looking younger actors anymore. But yeah, who do you think?
I would get. Let me think for a minute.
Yeah. Get the best one.
Liam Hemsworth, Liam Hemsworth looks more how I picture Michael Jose in my head. But everybody loves. Anytime you say Liam or Chris, everybody picks Chris. So you know him or Chris. Chris is a little older. I think Michael Jose was in his late 20s in the story. But yeah, we can overlook that. a Hemsworth, and I'm trying to think of the woman. I mean, just who's one of the most classically beautiful women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who would Angel be? I mean, there's so many good options. I feel like Margot Robbie.
Oh my!
She would.
I don't know those people. I know all the old movies. So yeah, you need to put that up on a website or something and let people vote.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it on maybe on the Story Nerds Instagram. We've just set there up Instagram, folks. If you're one of our regular listeners, we've had our Facebook page for a long time, but Story Nerds is now on Instagram. It's Story Nerds Podcast. Yay! So here we go. We'll have to do a casting call. Who would you have as Michael Hosea and Angel?
Give us your vote, and we'll
announce who it is.
All right, there you go.
That'll be great. Well, my last one, I'm also dipping a little bit out of the ancient time period because I haven't watched that many things or read that many that are ancient. But so I'm going to sneak up a little in time to Robin Hood, the Russell Crowe version of it.
Oh, really? You like the Russell Crowe version?
I do like the Russell Crowe version. I mean, I like the new one with Taron Egerton as well. It was a fun movie, but the Russell Crowe one was a awesome movie. Okay. I really liked that. And it's fun for me.
Back to Kevin Costner. But
go ahead. I have to say, I've never seen the whole Kevin Costner one. I think I remember seeing 10 minutes of it as a kid, but I've never watched the whole movie.
Okay.
But yeah, I do. I love the Russell Crowe one. His character just has such as well as romances, I love a good bromance or friendship sort of storyline. Mm-hmm. And the relationship he has with the guys who become, not that they're ever called this in the movie, but the Merry Men, you know, this little ragtag bunch of soldiers that he just so quietly leads. He never has to assert his leadership.
Yeah.
He's just like, okay, come on, boys, we're going to go do this now. And he's got this real sense of humor with them and genuine affection for them. And I just love watching the way he deals with them and jokes around with them. It's really funny. And they just follow him. And, you know, because they recognize that he's a good dude. And even if he doesn't know what he's doing, he's got everyone's best intentions at heart. And he's pretty smart to figure it out.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah,
awesome. Kate Blanchett as Maid Marian was just such a strong character. She was so tough and knew what she wanted, stood up for herself. That stinking sheriff of Nottingham was such a scumbag.
Such a scumbag.
Mr. Darcy the same, because it's the same actor.
Oh, yes.
But she's so strong with that, and, you know, the love story is so beautiful, and yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's like such a real inspiring story. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know what's there. It's fantastic. So Robin Hood, there we go. Oh, and that's the other thing I was going to say about it. It's fun for me because according to family legend, I'm descended from Robin Hood. There is a story in my father's family that we've come from England way back when, and that there was a English earl or lord or something like that called Robert de Everingham, who apparently, you know, he lived in Nottingham area, apparently had a lot of bad blood with the sheriff and the king's you weren't meant to steal them, but he used to hunt them to feed the people and different things. So there is thought that he is what became Robin Hood, but I know there's a lot of speculation that Robin Hood was actually a mashup of a lot of different people, or in fact was completely fictional. So, but I like to watch it and think, yes, that's my ancestor.
There you go. I love that. I can see you as Maid Marian. That works. Mama Maid Marian. That's good, Grandma. That works.
Yeah. Awesome. So now let's chat about your books, Misu. Tell us what it's about. I know you've been doing some really interesting hands-on research with it, and we were emailing about how this is a pretty edgy book. Do you want to tell us what makes that so interesting?
You know, this one, this the latest one out, it really has been more edgy than I realized. So let me say, first of all, that this one is kind of a continuation of a story that started in Isaiah's Daughter. So Isaiah's Daughter released in 2018 and actually was a Christie Award winner. I'll throw that in there.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it started out with the story of King Hezekiah, who was the best, the greatest, the most righteous king of Judah. And his queen was Queen Hephzibah. Say that 10 times fast, right? And Jewish legend holds that Queen Hephzibah was Isaiah's daughter. So that's where we get the title. And how fun is that, right?
Yeah.
And so Hezekiah and Hephzibah's story was this wonderful, just really wonderful romance. And it was the story of them. They knew each other since childhood. And it was, you know, the ups and downs of a romance. Like like we said before, you know, it's all the things that keep them apart. And then, you know, finally, I'm not giving you any spoilers. I mean, the Bible says they get together, right? So they get together.
The Bible spoiled it for us, people.
The Bible spoiler.
If you haven't read it in the last several thousand years, the statute of limitations on spoilers has ended.
That's exactly right. You know, time's up. It happened. So that's Hephzibah. Well, her story continues now in Isaiah's legacy. And again, with the statute of limitations, you read a little further in the Bible, and Hezekiah dies when their son Manasseh is 12 years old. And so Manasseh becomes king at 12 years old. And Manasseh is the most evil king Judah ever had. And I just, so about probably, I don't know, maybe now it's been 10 years, but probably not quite that long, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. My girls, it's been 10 years since my girls were in college now, but they went through a period of time where they were away from the Lord. And I started studying Hephzibah, and I thought, you know, her name means delight of the Lord. And I thought, how in the world could she still be a delight to the Lord when she had a wayward son? Because I was not very delightful when my daughters were being wayward. Not at all. And so I really fell in love with this Hephzibah character. And I really began to research, how in the world did her son go so terribly wrong when she and her husband seemed to be so godly and so good? And so this book, Isaiah's Legacy, that just came out in February of this year, it talks about some of the research that I did in finding out why this kid that took the throne at age 12 might have gone so terribly wrong. And in that research, some of it, one of the things that I found out was that Manasseh could recite the law 55 different ways. Now, when they say the law, they mean like Leviticus, the whole book. And I'm thinking, holy cow, I can't even recite the Ten Commandments. How in the world, once, let alone 55 different ways, right? So,
yeah.
And I'm thinking, could he have been a savant? And then I'm thinking, at age 12, what if there were advisors who pressured him in undue ways and had more influence on him? And then I thought, you know, kids influence kids, right? And at age 12, what is a 12-year-old boy starting to really be interested in. He's just coming into puberty, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking he's going to be swayed by a young lady or mm-hmm. by rebellion to his parents. And so as you're coming into your teenage years, those are the normal things that sway a teenage boy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my job in this book, was to show a realistic way for this 12-year-old kid to turn into the most wicked king of Judah without making him be somebody that, number one, the reader hates, and mm-hmm. and to make this romance between this 12-year-old kid and a 15-year-old girl not creepy. Right? Yeah. I mean, how do you do that? How do you make a romance between a 12-year-old boy and a 15-year-old girl not creepy? So that was quite the job.
Yeah. What a challenge. It sounds like the Breaking Bad of biblical times.
Right, doesn't it? Yeah, it is a little bit the Breaking Bad of biblical times. Yeah, exactly. But what, so the whole savant thing, what that turned into was I actually made Manasseh autistic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did lots and lots of research with some medical professionals. I actually had 5 or 6 moms of mm-hmm. autistic adolescent boys that mm-hmm. were my sensitivity readers. And mm-hmm. they read the manuscript through with me as I wrote. And they would say, oh, he wouldn't say it this way, or he wouldn't feel that way. He wouldn't be able
to express awesome.
Himself that way. He would do this, he would say this, he wouldn't do this. And so, and in fact, there was one of my best editors in that realm lives there in Australia. And she has 4 of her 5 children are high-functioning autistic, and she homeschools all 5.
Wow. And
we pray for her. Ages 5 through 13, I believe, her 5 kids. And the best thing that happened in my research was I did a Skype chat with her, and she went through some questions with me. She went through about 12 chapters of the manuscript with me on this Skype chat. But the best part about it was I watched her interact with her kids. And it mm-hmm. was such a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. And through that, I got such a sweet, sweet picture of a mom with her high-functioning autistic kids and how their life was, yes, it was different, but she helped me understand that high-functioning autistic kids, though, yes, they are different, it is something that they deal with in their family, just like other families deal with other issues with their children. You know, it's not uh-huh. something that is this big, bad, dark, awful, you know, it's another issue like other families deal with. And so it became something that wasn't this huge stigma. It was something that, yes, Manasseh may have dealt with it. And he may not have, this is fiction that I'm writing, but, it was important that I saw that so that I could make, number one, very sure that, people didn't misunderstand and think that Manasseh was wicked because he had autism.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had people in reviews and after they've read the book say to me, at least we understood that he wasn't violent because of the autism. Mm-hmm. He had a choice to sin or not to sin. The autism didn't take his choice away. Mm-hmm. And that was the point. I mean, I wanted to make sure that that came through very clearly. The other thing that I loved about doing his character with HFA, I wanted to have a romance with an HFA character, because I wanted to show. Did you watch Parenthood when it was on, that series?
No, I remember that it existed, but I'd never actually watched it.
Well, there was a little boy that had high functioning autism. Then they introduced a grown man that had high functioning autism, and one of the grown daughters tried to have a romantic relationship with this man that had the high functioning autism. And it was really interesting to watch that relationship try to grow because of some of the hurdles that come with high functioning autism. And so I wanted to show a romance with that hurdle in it. And I think it worked in the story.
Awesome. And there's certainly a growing interest in that realm at the moment with books like The Kiss Quotient or The Rosie Project, all tackling, romance with high functioning autism. And they've been wildly popular. So that's really cool.
Cool. Well, it's interesting. I've gotten some of the reviews have come back that, in fact, I just got one last week from a woman who said, I am high functioning autistic. And though this book has some parts in it that are hard to read, she said, I really appreciate how high functioning autism was portrayed in this book.
Oh, that's and awesome. So,
that to me was really encouraging. It was encouraging. So
that's wonderful. And I love reading and knowing the depth of research that these people really know what they've or have talked to people who really know what they're talking about. And it sounds like you've smashed that.
Well, I hope so. And I hope so because I wanted to see the romance side of it explored, because there are lots of other sides of it that are being explored elsewhere. I wanted to see the romance side of it explored in this in a positive way.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Misu. If people want to contact you or follow you online or get your book, where can they find you on the internet?
I am at www.mesuandrews.com. So I'm easy to find. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can find me on Pinterest even. So I'm all over the place.
Wonderful. And Isaiah's Legacy, the sequel to Isaiah's Daughter. That is the book to watch out for, everybody. Available now. You'll probably be buying it on your ebooks, I'm guessing, since none of us can go to the bookshops at the moment. My friend was furious because they've ruled bottle shops as essential, but bookshops not. She was like,
oh, I know, that's terrible. Right.
But yeah, get to see readers, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us, Misu. And if you want to continue the conversation with us, we will be chatting about who we would have play the characters of Michael Hosea and Angel in a Redeeming Love movie on our social media. So you can check us out at Story Nerds Podcast on either Facebook or Instagram now. Or you can find me at jessicakatewriting.com or at jessicakatewriting on both Facebook and Instagram. Thank you so much for joining us, Misu, and we'll see everybody next episode.
Thank you, Jessica.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.